After Iran's proxies attack U.S. bases in the region for a month, those proxies hold their fire for a fifth day, while another proxy group, Yemen's Houthis, fire a missile toward a U.S. military vessel. VOA's Pentagon correspondent helps us to make sense of those developments.
While they may not be directly tied to each other, it's a grand effort of destabilization, some of my sources say.
Plus, a Palestinian Authority official rebukes the Iranian foreign minister for using Palestinian proxies as a tool to pursue the destruction of Israel.
We are not one of his cards to play with.
And Iran's parliament calls for more effort to prevent the floods plaguing the country. A researcher tells us why he doubts the government will act. From the Voice of America, this is Flashpoint Iran. Good morning. I'm Michael Lippin in Washington. The U.S. Defense Department confirmed on Tuesday that there have been no attacks on U.S. forces in Iraq and Syria for a fifth straight day, coinciding with an ongoing five-day pause in the Israel-Hamas war. Iranian proxies had attacked those U.S. forces 73 times with a mix of drones, rockets, and ballistic missiles since October 17th. 10 days after Hamas, another Iranian proxy triggered the war with a surprise terror attack on Israel. The Pentagon has said a handful of the attacks on its forces wounded more than 60 U.S. military personnel. Pentagon spokesman Brigadier General Patrick Ryder was asked at a Tuesday press briefing what the U.S. is doing to ensure the lull in attacks continues.
Again, our forces are there for one reason, and that's to stay focused on the defeat ISIS mission. And so we will continue to focus on that mission, as well as ensuring that our forces are protected should there be any additional attacks. We would certainly hope that that's not the case, but we will be prepared to respond accordingly if there are any additional attacks on our forces.
VOA Pentagon correspondent Carla Babb has been monitoring the attacks and the several rounds of U.S. counterstrikes. I asked her by phone Tuesday what her sources are saying about the reasons for the lull.
Well, honestly, Michael, it depends on who you ask. Some defense officials have told me, yes, this is related to the ceasefire. Others say, no, it's not related at all. The Pentagon has not said one way or the other as to why the Iranian-backed proxies have stopped their attacks on U.S. forces in Iraq and Syria. But those that say that it's not related point out that the United States had just conducted two series of strikes against Iran-backed forces and their facilities in Iraq early last week. At least six militants were killed in those strikes. And so that, they say, is a deterrence message the Iranian-backed groups could not deny. I want to also point out that while there haven't been attacks against U.S. forces in Iraq and Syria over the last few days, at least one ballistic missile was fired towards the military ship USS Mason as it was helping a commercial vessel in an apparent Somali pirate attack. Now, the Pentagon says that USS Mason was not the intended target of this ballistic missile. It was fired from Yemen. But two sources that I spoke with disagree with that assessment.
What have those sources said about why the Houthis fired that missile in the general vicinity of a U.S. military vessel?
Well, they don't want to pinpoint the exact reason. They will ask me to go to the Houthis on that. But this is all a part of Iranian-backed groups trying to destabilize the region. You have seen the Houthis not only fire this missile towards USS Mason and towards that commercial vessel. I do want to note that it was several kilometers away. It did not land close enough to USS Mason to raise too many alarm bells there. But they've also fired other missiles in the direction of Israel that were shot down by U.S. forces in the waters of the Middle East. There have been all of these attacks in Iraq and Syria by various Iranian-backed proxy groups. There have been threats coming up from Hezbollah, which is also supported by Iran, about attacking in Israel. So this is all interconnected. While they may not be directly tied to each other, it's a grand effort of destabilization, some of my sources say.
Well, critics of the Biden administration have been saying that the several rounds of U.S. retaliatory strikes that we did see against these Iranian proxies in Iraq and Syria in recent weeks were not powerful or frequent enough to get them to stop, and that the proxies they felt were essentially ignoring the repeated U.S. warnings to cease the attacks. Well, now the attacks have actually ceased for 5 days. So how is the Biden administration handling this criticism, do you think? Are they feeling any vindication from the halt that we've seen in recent days?
Well, I just want to add, Michael, it was not just critics of the Biden administration that were concerned about the retaliatory strikes not being enough. There were officials that I spoke to within DOD. There were veterans. There were people who were within the Biden administration that were really wrestling with this. What does deterrence mean? And how do you stop these forces from attacking U.S. troops on the ground? You know, the U.S. troops on the ground are there to help their Syrian partners and their Iraqi partners counter ISIS and try to stabilize that region, and they're going to stay there. So there has to be some sort of deterrence that works. And that was one of the things I kept pressing the Pentagon. In fact, when one of the Pentagon officials, Sabrina Singh, the deputy press secretary, said that the Pentagon felt that deterrence was working, and I said, well, then is Iran not getting the message because they keep striking? So that was a real contentious point up here in Washington for several weeks. And when you look at past attacks, this has happened before. This is very pronounced. This is very intense, much more intense than we've seen. But there were these massive rounds of strikes against U.S. forces back in March. At that point, back in March, the Secretary of Defense was testifying about these attacks, and he had said that there had been over 80 that had happened during the Biden administration. And there was a senator, a Republican senator, Senator Tom Cotton, who pointed out, okay, so Iranian-backed proxies have attacked U.S. forces more than 80 times, and the U.S. has responded 4 times. This doesn't seem to be very proportional. But the problem that the Biden administration and the Pentagon has to weigh with this is that if you attack Iranian-backed proxies too much for attacking your troops, you may get the United States involved in a war, and you may expand the very same war that you're trying to get Iran not to expand. So it's a very difficult fine line that the United States is trying to walk right now. And we will just have to wait and see in the coming days if the strikes pick back up or if this has stopped Iranian-backed proxies from striking U.S. forces, at least at the moment.
Well, VOA Pentagon correspondent Carla Babb on the line from here in Washington. Thank you so much for speaking to Flashpoint Iran.
You're welcome.
Iran's Islamist rulers have praised Hamas for attacking Israel and have mobilized thousands of Iranian Islamists to stage pro-Palestinian and anti-Israel rallies in Tehran and other major cities on several occasions since October 7th. But those state-organized rallies have not garnered broader public support. VOA Persian correspondent Siamak Deganpour was on assignment in Jerusalem earlier this month and raised the issue of public sentiment in Iran while speaking with Israeli Foreign Ministry official Emmanuel Nachshon.
Well, we know and we have seen in the last years that there is a big difference to be made between the Iranian people and the Iranian government. The Iranian people, broadly speaking, as far as we can see, is not anti-Israel and is not anti-Semitic. We have followed very closely also the internal protests in Iran in the last couple of years. So we know that there is a growing disagreement between the government and the people. So it would make sense indeed that the people will not adhere to those anti-Semitic policies of the government.
What do you have to say to Jews in Iran who have been coerced to condemn Israel because of the recent events?
Well, we understand perfectly the circumstances in which they are. So it's all right. We understand that when you live in a dictatorship, sometimes you have no choice. This is part of what they have been living through since 1979. So we understand the difficulties that they are facing. And nevertheless, they are our brothers and sisters, and we love them very much.
Ambassador Nachshon, former Foreign Minister of Iran, Javad Zarif, said the other day that Iran and Hezbollah entering fully into this war is what Israel wishes for. Is that so?
I have no idea. I don't want to make interpretations of what Mr. Zarif says. I will say the following thing. We have no interest in war. We are not looking for war. We are not looking for confrontation. But we are not afraid of it. We will not shy from confrontation if it is imposed upon us. And this is the situation now. So we have a confrontation with Hamas, which was imposed upon us. We have Hezbollah playing a very, very dangerous game on the Israeli frontier, and we are reacting in the strongest possible way. If they look for war, they will find war, and they will be defeated. But this is not our objective.
That was Israeli Deputy Director General for Public Diplomacy, Emmanuel Nachshon. My colleague, Siamak Deganpour, also used his assignment to speak with Palestinian Authority Minister of Social Development, Ahmed Majdalani, in the West Bank city of Ramallah. During the interview, Deganpour pointed out that Iranian Foreign Minister Hossein Amir Abdollahian visited Lebanon earlier this month to meet with leaders of Hamas, but has not had any recent meetings with leaders of the Palestinian Authority, a longtime rival of the group. Deganpour then asked Majdalani how the Palestinian Authority of President Mahmoud Abbas views Iran's role in the conflict.
شوف منظمة التحرير الفلسطينية لا يمكن أن تكون مع المربع الإيراني.
مع المربع
الإيراني وتحالفاته في المنطقة.
The PLO cannot put itself within the Iranian sphere and its alliances in the region.
وإحنا مش راح نكون أيضا بالمربع الأمريكي الإسرائيلي.
And definitely not within the sphere of the United States and Israel.
نحن قرارنا وطني مستقل.
Our will is exclusively national and independent.
ولذلك نحن مش مع المشروع الإيراني بالمنطقة.
And therefore we are not with the Iranian ambitions and program.
ونحن مش من وكلاء إيران بالمنطقة.
And we are not Iranian agents.
ثاني بالتأكيد السيد حسين عبد اللهيان لن يزورنا ويتشاور معنا.
And for that reason, Hussein عبد اللهيان will not come and visit us and discuss things with us.
ولدي مهمة كان هو ارسال رسالة للولايات المتحدة الأمريكية أن إيران وحلفائها لن تتدخل في هذه الحرب.
And he had a task to convey to the United States and its allies that Iran will not interfere in this war. Iran and its allies will not step in into this war.
لكن بذات الوقت هو يروح بهذه الورقة.
And at the same time, he uses this card.
إحنا مش من إحنا لسنا من أوراقه.
And we are not one of his cards to play with.
ولذلك ما في تقاطع ما بين الموقف الفلسطيني الرسمي والموقف الإيراني.
And therefore there is no intersection between the Palestinian and Iranian position.
Mr. Majdalani, you went to Tehran in 2015, if I'm not mistaken, and there was an effort to have some kind of a rapprochement with a government in Iran. It failed, it didn't materialize. The last couple of years, especially, you have seen waves of opposition, protests going on, women's life freedom movement recently. PLO and the Palestinian Authority has always had some sort of support and connection with Iranian opposition. I was thinking if you have anything to share, because millions of Iranians will watch this interview.
إحنا أصدقاء مع الشعب الإيراني.
The Iranian people are our friends.
والشعب الإيراني شعب شقيق.
Brotherly people.
وإحنا لنا علاقات تاريخية وأوفياء لعلاقاتنا مع القوى والحركات السياسية الإيرانية.
We have historic ties with Iran and we are faithful to the political movements in Iran.
وهؤلاء أصدقائنا وإحنا حريصين على التعاون والتكامل معه.
They are our friends and we are keen on maintaining the cooperation and coordination with these groups.
صحيح. احنا حاولنا تصويب العلاقة مع الحكومة الإيرانية.
It's correct that we are trying to correct the relationship with the Iranian government.
للتعامل مع الحكومة الفلسطينية والنظام السياسي الفلسطيني باعتبار أن إيران تعترف بفلسطين كدولة.
On the basis that Iran would deal with the Palestinian political system especially that Iran considers Palestine as a state. We have an embassy in Iran.
بالتالي احنا كنا حريصين على ان يكون التعاون هو التعاون الرسمي بين دوله ودوله.
So we made sure to make the relationship is official and the coordination be on the basis of state to state.
وتصويب العلاقه يكون علاقه رسميه مع القياده الرسميه وليس مع تنظيمات تسلح مع تنظيمات تدعمها ايران.
And to correct the relationship on the basis that it will be an official relationship and not a relationship between a state and the armed groups which are supported by Iran.
نحن بالتأكيد مش راح احنا مش مجموعة مسلحة نتعامل مع إيران وفقا لأجندتها بالمنطقة.
We are not an armed group which is ready to cooperate with Iran according to its agenda.
للأسف هاي المحاولة لم تنجح.
Unfortunately, this attempt didn't work.
وكانت المحاولة الأخيرة.
And that was the last attempt.
Mr. Minister, there's been a concern that there might be another frontier in north, maybe with Hezbollah or another part of the region, be another new front into this war. But there are also reports that within West Bank, there are extremist groups that are being used or supported by the government in Iran. Do you have any knowledge of that? There are reports about the Arin al-Usud, those groups that are being manipulated by the government in Iran.
شوف حزب الله هو حزب عقائد وهو يؤمن بولاية الفقيه.
Hezbollah is an ideological group who believes in the reign of the faqih. You know what faqih is?
هذا شيء ديني.
This is something religious.
المجموعات اللي عندنا هي تختلف تماما عن هذا الموضوع.
Our groups differ from what is there.
ولذلك لا يمكن توصيفها ولا تصنيفها بأنها بهذه الطريقة.
So the groups here cannot be described or labeled as such.
ولا واحد منهم أيديولوجي. عنده فكر أيديولوجي. وبالنادر منهم لتلاقي حدا منظم بحماس أو بالجهاد.
And none of really you find somebody who is really enrolled or a member in Hamas or Islamic Jihad.
عدد قليل جدا.
Very few.
لكن الغالبية العظمى من هاي المجموعات هم من الشباب الصغار اللي بالمخيمات اللي فاقدين الأمل بالمستقبل وفقدوا الأمل بالحل السياسي.
But the overwhelming majority of these armed youth are from the refugee camps and from the villages who lost hope and faith in the future and in the political solution.
عندما يفقد الإنسان الأمل بتصير الأمور متساوية.
When a human being is desperate, things become the same.
Dr. Majdalani, thank you so much.
Thank you very much. Welcome.
You're listening to VOA's Flashpoint Iran. I'm Michael Lippin. The Iranian Parliament's Research Center says climate change has intensified flash flooding that has long plagued many parts of the country. In a report cited by Iranian state media on Saturday, the parliamentary researchers said they have recorded 4,500 floods in the past decade. The report also said a majority of Iranians are exposed to floods and other natural disasters like drought, land subsidence, and earthquakes. It urged the Iranian government to make greater efforts at disaster prevention. Nick Ahankosar is a U.S.-based analyst who has long studied Iran's water problems. I asked him by phone why Iran experiences both severe floods and droughts.
We have had droughts and floods in all our history. And in the past two decades, because of man-made mistakes, especially the unsustainable development in the agricultural and water sectors, many parts of Iran are vulnerable to both the drought and these flash floods. We may have, let's say, possibly 5 to 8 inches of rain annually in many parts of the country. But unfortunately, you'll get that rain in possibly 2 or 3 days in some parts. So for most of the year, some of these regions are dry. And then when you have the rain, when you have the storms, in just a blink of an eye, you'll get a major flood because the land cannot absorb the water and it just goes downstream. And because of all the soil that it has eroded, you get these muddy, murky waters that are very powerful and can destroy villages and farmlands. So it will have a negative impact on the lives of millions of people.
In terms of providing solutions to those millions of people for these recurring problems of drought and flash floods, in a recent interview with VOA Persian, you said that there are people in Iran who have their own innovative and inexpensive ideas for how to do prevention of these natural disasters. So what are those solutions?
Actually, one of the major solutions is called flood water management to artificially recharge the aquifer. So by controlling the floods and through spate irrigation, experts have been able to use the flood water to save aquifers and groundwater resources, because Iran is really poor right now regarding its groundwater resources that have mostly been depleted in the last 4 decades. So by creating small canals and diverting the flood and spreading it on the floodplains, Iranian experts have been able to both actually create a thin layer of soil on these lands as well as absorbing the water. It's a sort of a nature-based solution that has helped a number of regions, but the problem is that the regime doesn't like cheap and economically sound projects.
Well, why wouldn't the Iranian government want such solutions to these problems?
First of all, because many officials love building dams, because people can see the water that has been stored in a dam reservoir, but they cannot see the water that has been stored under the ground. And then building a dam is really expensive. Major dams cost billions of dollars. And because the IRGC's construction firm, or Hatem al-Anbiya construction headquarters, is in charge of building many major dams, it can get lots of money from the regime. And part of that money, based on our recent research, goes to the Quds Force. And we know what Quds Force is famous for.
Right. Well, the Quds Force is famous for being the elite overseas operations force of the Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps. So what is your outlook for how Iran may be affected by floods and drought in the upcoming winter months?
One big problem is that the Iranian officials are mostly reactionary and they don't act proactively to solve the problem before it appears. So a lot of the national budget is wasted on reactions to the floods or all the other natural or unnatural problems that we have. And in the next few months, wherever we have floods, unfortunately, many farmers and villagers will be harmed. And in some cities that the local governments have not been able to take care of the flood water, houses, streets, and different urban areas will be flooded. And unfortunately, there's also a sanitation problem in these parts, and many will be sick because of those floods.
Nick Ahankosar, independent water issues analyst and researcher on the line from the Washington, D.C. area. Nice of you to come back onto Flashpoint Iran.
Thank you for having me, Michael.
That's a wrap of the program. I'm Michael Lippin. Good to have you with us, and please come back again in a week for the next Flashpoint Iran.